Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're taking on a really fascinating personal experiment. It lasted 365 nights, and it's still going, and it seems to have fundamentally changed how one person experiences reality.
It's an incredible account. And our sources for this deep dive, they're all focused on analyzing this one single, very detailed story of self-directed transformation.
That's right. We are dissecting the long-term, you know, the cumulative effects of listening to Hemisync binaural beats.
Every single night for over a year.
Yeah, and that's the part that's so different. Most people, they treat binaural beats like a quick tool, right? A temporary boost.
Exactly. This listener treated it like a relentless daily training regime for their own brain.
So the mission today, it isn't just to talk about sound and brainwaves. It's really to understand the profound shift that this kind of consistency provoked. Mm-hmm. The user described it perfectly, I thought. They said the process wasn't about adding new features, but about tuning the brain like a bloody musical instrument.
And that's such a great way to put it, because it's not just tuning it for a single concert. It's about adjusting the fundamental pitch of the entire instrument.
So you're changing its resting state.
You are. When you force the brain to follow these external frequencies day in and day out for that long, you are literally changing its default behavior. We're going to be looking at the physiological reality of that, but also the symbolic and psychological factors that made it all stick.
Right, because the result, we're told, was the creation of a different operating system. So I think the core question we're tackling is this. What happens when you force the brain's hemispheres into these specific synchronous states for a year straight?
And how does that process fundamentally alter your core functions?
Exactly. How you perceive things, how you intuit things, and this is the big one, how you create. So let's dive deep into the mechanical engine first, the how.
Let's do it.
Okay, let's start with the basics of neural entrainment, but I want to focus immediately on the time component. I mean, everyone sort of knows the concept of binaural beats now.
It's pretty mainstream.
Right, but most people use them for, what, a 30-minute focus burst? Or maybe to help them fall asleep one night? What happens when you repeat that 365 times?
Well, the mechanism itself is what's so important to grasp. The word binaural is the key. You're presenting one frequency, let's say 100 hertz, to the left ear.
Okay.
And a slightly different one, say 104 hertz to the right ear. Now, the brain can't actually process those two separate tones. It can't distinguish them. So it resolves the difference internally.
Ah, so it creates a third tone that isn't really there.
Precisely. It perceives a third phantom beat that oscillates at 4 hertz. The difference between 104 and 100.
So the brain is essentially tricking itself into following a rhythm that isn't even in the sound wave.
It is. And 4 hertz, that frequency falls squarely into the theta brainwave range. So the brain is literally forced to start emitting brainwaves at that 4 hertz frequency. It's a kind of rhythmic sensory manipulation, and the brain is incredibly susceptible to following external rhythms.
But if you just do it once, the effect is, what, temporary?
It's transient. It fades pretty quickly after you take the headphones off.
But this listener was clearly not interested in a transient effect. They were training their brain.
Exactly. That consistent nightly exposure, that 365-night protocol, is what turns the entrainment from a temporary state shift into a deliberate long-term training program for the brain's default state.
It's like physical therapy for the brain.
That's a perfect analogy.
Yeah.
You can do one session and feel a bit of temporary relief, or you can commit for a year and structurally change your muscle memory, your posture. This is changing the brain's neurological habit, its preferred resting state.
That makes a lot of sense. The brain is the ultimate pattern-seeking machine, right? It wants to be efficient.
Uh-huh.
So if you show it the same pattern for 365 days, it just goes, okay, I guess this is the new normal. It's efficient.
And it adopts it as a new baseline.
Mm-hmm.
And the specific outcomes here, they seem to focus on two things that are just transformative. First, training the brain to drop into those deeper, more receptive theta states much faster. And second, and this is crucial, increasing the functional coherence between the brain hemispheres. That's the real goal. Teaching the brain to keep both hemispheres online at once.
Yeah.
Which is content. It's just not how we normally operate in our standard waking consciousness.
I want to pause on that for a second. That dual processing idea, we normally operate with hemispheric dominance, right? We're switching between the left brain analytical language and the right brain holistic creative.
Mm.
If you force them both to be online at the same time, wouldn't that create some kind of neurological friction?
It does, mm-hmm. Initially, absolutely. And that friction, that momentary resistance, people often feel it as a kind of buzzing or internal pressure when they first start this kind of training. But once the system adapts, Once the training takes hold,
it becomes an upgrade.
A major upgrade in cognitive hardware.
Yeah.
You gain this superior dual processing capacity. You can be engaged in a really complex analytical task while simultaneously holding these creative or symbolic insights in your conscious awareness.
Yeah.
Without that mental toggling back and forth.
Wow. So it's less like a turbocharger and more like installing a whole second mirrored CPU.
That's a good way to think about it.
So what are the predictable effects of that kind of sustained internal unity? What does that get you?
The effects are pretty remarkable. The research and this personal account, they line up. It's associated with significantly enhanced pattern recognition. You just see connections that were totally invisible before.
Okay.
You experience what are described as unusual insights that don't feel like you logically generated them. They just drop in, fully formed, from that integrated processing. And we see a spontaneous resurgence of symbolic thinking.
Where everyday things suddenly have meaning.
Immediate personal significance, exactly.
And what about the emotional side of it? The user reported huge shifts in how they processed feelings.
That integration is key for emotional stability. It leads to these more pronounced emotional processing waves. The feelings are felt very intensely. They're not being suppressed. But because they're so integrated, they're brief. They just move through the system efficiently.
And you're left with what?
A profound sense of inner spaciousness, a tangible reduction in that ceaseless low-level internal background noise that just eats up most of our daily attention.
Okay, let's talk about the actual physical part of this integration. We have to look at the corpus callosum. It's always described as that great fiber bridge connecting the two hemispheres.
The big bridge.
Yeah. So when you force synchronization every night for a year, what's actually happening to that bridge?
It gets extremely efficient. Or as Thesaurus puts it, it gets sporty. The corpus callosum is the largest bundle of nerve fibers in the brain. Its whole job is integration motor, sensory, cognitive.
Right.
Nightly synchronization trains this pathway to handle massive amounts of traffic and to do it quickly. It's like you're paving the main highway and adding high-speed fiber optics to it. And the critical result of this is faster subconscious data transfer to the conscious mind.
So all the stuff we normally only process subconsciously, that subtle shift in someone's body language, the micro vibrations in a machine, a gut feeling about a decision, that information suddenly gets an express pass. It bypasses the normal cues.
That is the mechanism, exactly.
Yeah.
And we see physical evidence of this speed upgrade. The source mentions these undeniable intuitive hits, sudden memory floods where all this complex related data just surfaces instantly. Cohesively.
And the body signals, the idea that the body reacts before the thought.
Yes, and that's where the shoulder spark or microspasm comes in. It's fascinating.
That physical twitch, I mean, how does a little muscle twitch connect to the speed of data transfer in your brain?
It's a spectacular demonstration that the information is moving faster than your old conscious narrative system. Your subconscious detects the pattern. Maybe it's a threat, maybe an immediate insight, a profound emotional connection, and it fires the response through the nervous system somatically.
So the body reacts first.
The body reacts first, signaling to the self. Only a millisecond later does the conscious mind catch up with the explanation for that signal. The physical microspasm is the system making a tiny electrical correction because the sensory information is flowing too fast for the normal, slower conscious filters to interpret in time.
That's incredible. It suggests the body has become the first alert system for this upgraded mind. It's the first exit ramp off that new superhighway.
It is the ultimate indicator of integrated processing. The whole system is operating as a unit, and the physical brain architecture isn't the bottleneck anymore.
Okay, let's shift focus to the doorway that the hemisync was targeting, the theta state. We usually think of theta as that, you know, pleasant, drowsy twilight just as you're falling asleep.
Or just as you're waking up.
Right. So why is intentionally training this specific frequency so transformative over the long term?
Because theta defines a crucial threshold. It's that 4 to 8 hertz frequency band, and it sits directly between your waking consciousness beta and alpha and your deep sleep material in delta. It's the optimal state for memory consolidation, deep learning, suggestibility, and for accessing subconscious material.
So when you repeatedly train the brain to get into theta right at the cusp of sleep, you're conditioning it.
You're conditioning it to respect that space.
And by conditioning it, you're training it not to just slam the door shut as soon as you wake up.
Exactly. The long-term effect is conditioning the brain to keep the doorway open. The brain learns that it's safe, that it's even beneficial to allow data to pass through this threshold. In a normal brain, when you wake up, that theta doorway slams shut as your beta and alpha consciousness fires up for the day.
Gotta make breakfast, gotta check emails.
That's right, executive function takes over. For this listener, the brain learns not to fully shut off access to that deep subconscious well of information. And that's a profound structural change in your default conscious operating mode.
And I imagine the world becomes a lot more interesting when that deep well of memory and pattern recognition is actively kind of leaking into your day.
It does. The door left ajar explains a whole host of these reported, seemingly esoteric effects. Things like intense, vivid intuition, powerful dream bleed through, where dream imagery or solutions feel immediately relevant to your waking problems.
And deja vu. The source mentions deja vu stacks.
Profound. Deja vu stacks, which aren't necessarily paranormal. They're likely instances of complex pattern recognition firing so fast that it feels like you've already lived the moment.
The brain is running the future predictions so fast that it feels like a memory.
Precisely. And the key is that sense of receiving rather than generating knowledge. The intuition feels like a download, not a calculation. You're not actively working out the answer. You're just accepting the high-speed inference that your newly integrated system has already calculated for you.
Because the brain has been trained to be hospitable to that information.
Profoundly hospitable to subconscious material, yes.
We've talked about the speed of information, but we need to talk about the system that processes the meaning of that information, the default mode network, the DMN. For many of us, the DMN is our relentless internal narrator.
The storyteller.
Yeah, the storyteller that creates the story of me.
Yeah.
It's often the source of anxiety, planning, self-doubt.
Well, the DMN is the primary network for autobiographical memory, for projecting yourself into the future, and critically, for that sense of self or the ego boundary. It's the internal monologue. Persistent chatterbox always running in the background.
And it's constantly defining who we were, who we want to be.
And all the worries that come with that.
So if you're constantly tuning the brain for coherence and pushing subconscious material into your consciousness, what happens to that self-defining narrative?
Long-term hemisync and the coherence it creates tends to soften or destabilize the DMN's dominance.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't erase it. You don't lose your sense of self, but it significantly quiets that relentless, often critical internal chatter.
And when the DMN is quieter, what happens?
Several key shifts occur. You gain this profound presence in the current moment. The boundary between you and pure intuition becomes porous. And you find a spontaneous ease in getting into deep meditative states, even when you're doing something intense.
So if that internal critic and the self-doubting narrator are minimized, that sounds like the structural reason for the feeling of creative authority we'll talk about later.
That's the foundation for it.
But let's focus on emotion for a second. The user said that their emotional reactions became non-verbal or pre-verbal. What does that mean?
That is the ultimate sign of the DMN being deprioritized. When the DMN is dominant, an emotion comes up, let's say frustration. The DMN immediately jumps in to create the story. I'm frustrated because X person did Y, and that always happens, and it's so unfair.
It's that narration just prolongs the feeling.
It reinforces it. It keeps it in a loop. But with a softened DMN, the emotional reaction prioritizes sensation and insight over that narrative. The emotion hits the system as a pure wave of sensation, just heat, pressure, energy, and it's processed immediately by the limbic system and the newly coherent cortex.
And the thought about the feeling comes later.
Only later. And often it's optional. The new operating system prioritizes sensation, leading directly to insight. It bypasses that whole detour of endless, self-limiting narration.
That sounds like a huge mental health upgrade right there. You stop fighting the feeling by telling stories about it, and you just start processing it by experiencing it.
It signifies an incredible efficiency in limbic to cortical communication. The emotional data gets distributed and integrated rather than being trapped in a loop of worry or rumination driven by that narrative self. The system truly stops fighting itself.
And it starts functioning as a coherent whole. So we've mapped out the internal engine, the speedy corpus callosum, that open theta doorway, the softened DMN. It sounds great on a diagram, but what did it actually feel like in daily life?
The manifestation.
Yeah. The user identified three massive shifts. Let's start with the most dramatic one. The sensory shift, perception. The user said, I notice everything now.
And this is the critical transition from the mechanism to the manifestation. This is the classic observable hallmark of entrainment-induced sensory gating adjustment.
Sensory gating, let's break that down.
Well, we all know that feeling, right? The hum of the air conditioner, the tag on your shirt, the pressure of your shoes. It all just disappears into the background. Your brain does that on purpose.
To save energy and probably to maintain sanity.
Exactly. Sensory gating is the neurological process where the brain filters out redundant or unnecessary information. It's the brain's built-in spam filter. Normal humans rely on this heavily. We essentially ignore 90% of the raw reality data hitting our systems. Otherwise, we'd just be paralyzed by stimuli.
So the year of entrainment acted like turning the sensitivity on that spam filter down from high to, say, medium.
That's a great way to put it. The filters loosened significantly. The nervous system learned to sample more data because the brain now had the coherence and the capacity, thanks to all that upgraded hardware we just talked about, to process it without being overloaded.
Which results in what? Greater sensitivity.
Greater sensitivity, rapid shifting of attention, and profound pattern detection in your environment. And this is the basis for the user's ability to tune out specific noises, like a pet whining, on command. They gained conscious control over their sensory gate.
This leads us straight to the anecdote that is probably the most, visually striking in the whole story.
The motorcycle.
The motorcycle. The ability to feel my way into my motorcycle and, like, witness what's going on inside the engine. This is where the average person starts thinking, oh, this is a superpower.
It is a superpower, but it's a purely cognitive one, derived from advanced integration. It's not clairvoyance. It's a demonstration of somatic modeling and predictive coding firing at full voltage.
Okay, somatic modeling.
Your brain has evolved to run these internal, high-fidelity simulations of systems you interact with. When your sensory gate loosens and your your awareness of your own bodily signals increases, your brain receives exponentially more data.
And what kind of data are we talking about here? Not just seeing and hearing?
Oh, no. Microvibrations through the handlebars. Subtle changes in the engine's acoustic profile, your on-muscle tension correlating with external resistance, tiny shifts in balance. Before the entrainment, that data was just discarded by the sensory filter. Now the brain integrates it instantly.
So the brain is running this hyper-accurate, live internal simulation, like a digital twin of the motorcycle's mechanical state, the airflow, the traffic, your body's position, all at the same time.
It's running a real-time predictive model right alongside reality. The brain is so rich in sensory data that it can accurately predict the engine's function or the need for an adjustment because it's perceiving microsignals that everyone else misses.
Which isn't mystical at all. It's just raw, unfiltered data that feeds directly into the second big shift, intuition.
Exactly.
So the second shift is intuition, which went from being a rare coincidence to a constant, reliable presence. It was hitting multiple times a day. How do we explain that jump in reliability?
We have to anchor it back to the structural changes. Intuition in this newly wired brain is basically high-speed neural inference reaching consciousness without language.
Subconscious pattern recognition.
Firing so quickly that it surfaces as an undeniable gut feeling before the analytical mind even has time to organize the data and build a story.
And in a normal, less coherent brain, that inference might happen subconsciously, but it gets filtered or delayed, or the DMN immediately jumps in to question it.
That's the core difference. The pathway is now perfectly reinforced. The enhanced sensory data from shift one is being fed directly and quickly across the unified hemispheres. The theta doorway is open, allowing those deep patterns to surface instantly. The nightly entrainment built a highly effective neural racetrack from detection to insight.
So intuition became more frequent just because the architecture for it was built and then consistently maintained.
Yes. It's not about getting a new ability. It's about unmuting the ability that was always there and making the signal strong enough to trust.
And that trust is key. Because the DMN, the inner critic, is softened, the user doesn't immediately question or narrate the intuitive hit away. The feeling rises faster, and the conscious mind is just more receptive to its validity, its reliability built on structural neural coherence.
Absolutely.
Now for the third shift, which the sources call the real transformation, the shift in composition, or achieving the creator identity mode. This goes beyond just seeing more and knowing more. This fundamentally changes the user's ability to act and to create.
This is the convergence point. This is where all the neurological changes result in a new, stable identity blueprint. The long-term entrainment provided, really, four key internal architectural changes that redefine your ability to create effortlessly.
Which are?
A lower basal fear response, higher executive function, so better planning and self-control, superior integration between imagination and logic, and finally, a stable sense of inner authority.
So the engine is quieter, it's faster, and now the driver is more confident. Where does that unshakable creative authority come from?
It comes from the structural rewiring of the part of the brain that generates friction. The user didn't achieve confidence through, you know, positive affirmations or forcing motivation. They structurally minimized the internal system, that DMN critic, that questioned their capacity to execute.
They achieved automatic stable access to flow state patterns.
That's it. And that's a huge difference. Most of us struggle with that gap between having an idea and actually starting the execution. When a complex creative task or the system building idea comes up, the mind no longer defaults to that old exhaustive loop of, am I skilled enough? What if this fails? What will people think? That architecture is now minimized. The coherence and speed allow the system to receive the intuitive hit and immediately start executing the logistical steps.
So the confidence isn't just hype. It's the stable scaffolding of a mind that's fully coherent and can deploy all its resources, logic, intuition, memory, instantly.
Is deployment without delay. The result is the ability to build complex systems on the fly, invent detailed frameworks instantly, and maintain execution without hesitation. It's an identity defined by action and creation, not by contemplation and doubt.
It is, as the source says, the creator identity mode.
Unequivocally.
And this whole experience with these multiple layers, the sensory upgrade, the intuitive access, the foundational confidence, it's all summarized by the user's own metaphor, Neapolitan consciousness.
Which is perfect.
It's not three separate states you toggle between. It's three distinct swirling flavors that are integrated and coactive.
That's the perfect analogy because it implies fusion. Most people might have a flash of perception, or a moment of intuition, or a period of confidence. Neapolitan consciousness suggests these are blended into a single unified operating mode, and they're enriching one another constantly.
So let's map the flavors. The chocolate layer, that's the dense, grounded, physical aspect.
The chocolate layer is the enhanced perception mode. It's the somatic upgrade, the physical awareness rooted in the body. It's the micro details, the ability to feel the texture of reality, the hyper awareness you get from loosening the sensory gate. This layer is crucial. It grounds the entire experience in physical, observable reality.
And if chocolate is grounding, then the strawberry layer is the wilder, surprising flow.
That is the intuition integrated mode. Strawberry is those daily, unmistakable intuitive hits, the pattern recognition that surfaces with zero friction. It's the subconscious flowing into the conscious, unmuted and accessible. It's the element of surprise and delight that comes with reliable high-speed insight.
And finally, vanilla, the stable base that ties it all together.
Vanilla is the composition or identity mode. It's the core inner coherence, the calm authority, the structural disappearance of self-doubt. This layer provides the stability. Without a strong vanilla foundation, the intense chocolate of perception and the rapid strawberry of intuition could lead to chaos, sensory overload.
Right.
Because the identity is stable, the expanded awareness doesn't destabilize the system. The flavors aren't switching. They are coactive. They define the new operating system.
Okay, so it would be simple to just say HemiSync did it all, but the sources really emphasize that this outcome was a multi-factor convergence. HemiSync was the mechanical engine, but there were two key psychological and symbolic multipliers involved. And the first was a prior experience with quantum healing hypnosis technique, or QHHT.
This is a critical distinction. HemiSync was the bottom-up neural architecture transformation. QHHT, which the user experienced before the 365-day protocol even began, served as the primer cut.
A primer cut.
It provided a top-down, meaning-based transformation that altered the psyche's initial configuration, making it ready for the hard wiring that was about to follow.
How does a deep hypnotic state like QHHT function as a primer for long-term neurological change?
Well, QHHT guides you into the deepest possible trance, somnambulistic state, to access subconscious data, facilitate trauma release, and fundamentally shift your perspective on your own identity and purpose. The crucial effect here is the profound softening of ego boundaries and the reopening of intuitive channels that years of, you know, conventional living had closed off.
So QHT didn't teach the brain to synchronize. It convinced the identity that synchronization was a safe and desirable path. It created psychological plasticity.
Exactly. It cracked the door open. It was a psychological acceptance. The conscious mind, after QHHT, was already in a more fluid, receptive mode, anticipating and accepting deep change. This is the multiplier effect.
QHHT reduced the internal resistance.
It reduced the psychological resistance, and HemiSync leveraged that lack of resistance every single night for a year to enact deep structural change. Without the QHHT, the system might have fought the entrainment, treating it as an intrusion. With both, They created a convergence where the physical and psychological changes just reinforce each other.
Okay, now we get to the part that might make some listeners raise an eyebrow, the crystals. The user carried two specific stones, blue tiger's eye and red kyanite, every day, to the point where they felt off baseline if they were left at home.
Right.
So if HemiSync is the engine, why are these rocks suddenly necessary? Are we talking about energy fields, or is there a more grounded cognitive explanation for their power?
And that skepticism is warranted, but the explanation is entirely cognitive and psychological. The crystals were not emitting brainwaves. They were acting as powerful psychological, neurological anchors that dramatically reinforced intentionality.
So they were physical placebos that the brain chose to integrate into the process.
I'd say more than a placebo. They were constant tactile signals. Every time the user touched them or saw them on the nightstand or just felt their presence in a pocket, it strengthens the internal narrative of transformation. It lit up the neural circuits associated with self-regulation and symbolic memory.
They were a concrete physical representation of the change.
A constant reinforcement. The intention, anchored in a physical object, amplifies neuroplasticity.
And this psychological anchoring explains the not normal without them phenomenon. If they get left at home, the user feels subtly unsynced.
That feeling is the strongest evidence of their function. It confirms that crystals became a regulatory component within the nervous system's schema of self. During that year of intense brain rewiring, the brain established a complex set of sensory and ritualistic expectations for its default coherent state.
So the brain's prediction system learned, if I am feeling coherent, then the crystals must be present. So if you remove the object, the prediction fails.
And that prediction failure is interpreted by the brain as a failure of calibration. Something is missing. My current state isn't aligned with the expected state, and that results in the feeling of being unsynced. They became stability markers, not magical power sources.
The physical objects were integrated into the identity architecture that HemiSync was building.
Yes.
What's really fascinating here is the lack of conscious choice. The user didn't pick these stones. They were gifted unexpectedly.
Which bypassed conscious choice and imprinted them straight onto the subconscious as initiation tokens. That timing is crucial. When a meaningful object is gifted during a period of massive identity flux, it carries extreme emotional and symbolic weight. The subconscious mind, which speaks fluently in symbols, assigns meaning instantly.
Tagging them as part of the new, better timeline.
Exactly. The symbolism became deeply imprinted because it didn't have to be rationalized by the conscious mind.
So let's look at the specific archetypes of this pairing, starting with blue tiger's eye or hawk's eye.
Blue tiger's eye is the symbolic stone of heightened awareness and perception. Its archetype represents hawk vision, acute awareness, danger detection, spatial consciousness, nonverbal pattern recognition. It maps perfectly to the perception arc we discussed.
It provides the psychological resonance for that new perceptual bandwidth.
It's essentially the physical reminder for the I notice everything and I can feel the engine sensory state. It anchors the right hemisphere functions that HemiSync strengthens, confirming that this new state is intentional and stable.
And the red kyanite.
Red kyanite is the archetype of action, movement, and flow. Symbolically, it represents clearing blockages, willpower, and forward drive without hesitation. This anchors the intuition and action arc that shift into the creator identity mode. It reinforces the stability to execute cleanly once the perception and insight have landed.
So the two gifted stones created the necessary symbolic poles for this upgraded mind.
Perceive, blue tiger's eye goes to intuit, which goes to act, red kyanite. The subconscious seamlessly built this triadic regulatory structure. The symbols provided the psychological scaffolding necessary to contain and utilize the immense neurological change from the HemiSync. The genius of this transformation was that convergence of the mechanical, the psychological, and the symbolic.
We've covered the mechanics, the observable shifts, and the multipliers. Now we need to address the pacing of all this. The user noted, the slow drip happens to be exactly what people don't want to hear.
Oh, yeah.
We live in a culture that expects instant gratification, sudden lightning bolt awakenings.
And that expectation is fundamentally flawed when you're dealing with neuroplasticity.
Mm-hmm.
The reality is that the change must be incremental, stable, and cumulative. Otherwise, it leads to destabilization or chaos. A sudden massive shift in consciousness often leads to dissociation, loss of grounding, and inability to actually function in daily life.
So that millimeter of shift, repeated 365 times, is what prevents the system from cracking its own foundation.
It ensures that the change is functional, embodied, and lasting. The curiosity and the commitment to consistency provided the perfect, gentle pace for self-reorganization. The brain had time to build the new highway, and the body had time to adapt to the new speed.
Let's circle back to those strange physical manifestations, the shoulder jerks or somatic discharges the user experienced when handling the crystals. Are these just residual stress?
No. They're tiny, but they're significant. They are electrical corrections the nervous system makes when handling objects that are tied so deeply into the identity architecture. It's a somatic discharge. The system is essentially recognizing the anchors and making minute adjustments to synchronize itself back to the current, newer version of the self.
So it's the body saying, "All right, this is the version of me that processes data at high speed."
Precisely. It's a micro reset. The body is confirming the mental state and stabilizing the awareness, creating a strong feedback loop between the physical object and the profound neurological state.
Now, for what I think is the most profound psychological realization that caps this entire journey, the transformation didn't feel like becoming someone new.
Which, as the user notes, often feels foreign or forced.
Instead, it felt like remembering myself.
And that phrase is the signature of an authentic awakening arc. When change feels like becoming, it can indicate an inauthentic or unstable identity being adopted. When it feels like remembering, it means the individual has simply reclaimed the perceptive, intuitive, and confident self that was already coded into their internal blueprint.
So the HemiSync and the QHHT didn't install new software or abilities. They just removed the static and the resistance.
That is the ultimate mechanism of remembering. The long-term entrainment successfully unclogged the system. It removed the layers of noise, the old self-limiting habits, the restrictive DMN narrative that was keeping that powerful self buried. What emerged wasn't foreign, it was the self that had been waiting all along.
If it had felt foreign, it would indicate a forced, unstable change.
But because it felt familiar-like coming home, it confirms the user simply integrated something ancient and inherent to them. The transformation wasn't accidental. It was authored by the listener's own internal blueprint, followed consistently over a year.
Resulting in an alignment, not an ascension.
And the power of this finding is rooted in internal coherence. That profound feeling of significance came because the analytical breakdown of their experience perfectly matched their lived experience. It felt accurate inside my own system.
Which is the definition of a stable, integrated consciousness.
The conscious mind finally synthesized the pattern that the subconscious had been engineering all along. The journey didn't end with awakening into the cosmos or gaining superpowers in the traditional sense. It ended with something far more practical and stable.
The removal of static.
They awakened into a fully online version of themselves, uncluttered, stronger, and inherently more coherent. And the change is stable precisely because it matches their personal truth, not some external mystical claim. That ability to own and integrate the experience rather than mythologize it is the final permanent stabilizing factor.
This deep dive took us on a pretty spectacular journey, far beyond just basic brainwave entrainment. The entire story is really a case study in complex adaptive system behavior.
It demonstrates the human consciousness is highly tunable, provided you respect the input and the time required for structural change.
We saw that a focused, long-term protocol like HemiSync served as the mechanical engine, you know, structurally rewiring the brain over 365 nights.
But the stability and the integration, that lack of resistance, it only came through the multi-factor convergence. The psychological priming of QHHT and the symbolic anchoring from the crystals.
So the big takeaway for you, the learner, is profoundly encouraging, I think. The most powerful and lasting transformations are not the chaotic fast ones that Hollywood loves.
No, they're the slow drip integrations.
Consistency, curiosity, and non-resistance to your own unfolding internal blueprint. Those are the actual reliable keys to neuroplastic change.
The listener didn't achieve a forced temporary enlightenment. They achieved deep, stable alignment. And that alignment is the state where perception, intuition, and creation function as one fluid, stable system, which is what that Neapolitan consciousness is all about.
So as you reflect on this journey into long-term neural conditioning, consider this provocative thought for your own musing. We've explored how consistent sound and physical symbols created an integrated mind. What subtle, consistent daily behavior are you currently engaging in? Whether it's running, journaling, solving puzzles, or just maintaining a consistent curiosity that might be quietly rewiring your own operating system without you even realizing it. Is your slow drip already underway, building the foundation for a more coherent version of you?